Hey, this is post-production Matthew Marissa. Content warnings for this episode include brief discussions on child abuse and suicide. As always, content warnings will be in the episode description as well as at the start of each episode whenever necessary.
I'm connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for the computer today.
Computer.
NetSurfer Pro.
Oh, man.
That was actually pretty good. I got some good sleep.
Yeah, man. As an insomniac, that was that's one of the best sleeps I've gotten.
This was supposed to be, like, a torture chamber, but, I mean, maybe I should switch businesses.
Yeah, honestly, like, you could probably market that gas stuff. That isn't, like, toxic or anything, right?
That one's not. However, that does bring me. I added another incentive to kick you into motion.
Ah, darn. Oh, man. Okay, so, well, what is it this time?
Well, I poked holes in the wall, and if you take too long, then the room will fill with a deadly poisonous gas.
Ah, darn it. Just like the gas from the Saw movies.
Yeah. Wait, did the Saw movies have gas?
I guess you have to check the script.
Don't look at it. Don't look it up. It's not worth it.
Hold on, I think I could reach the phone.
Wait, yeah, hang on. Oh yeah, the phone!
Oh shit, I must have knocked that loose while I was doing all that hardware work. You know what? Okay, this is a lifeline. Yeah, you know, you can use this to phone a friend.
Oh, like my favorite game, Jeopardy for the PlayStation 2.
Exactly like Jeopardy for the PlayStation 2, back when Trebek was the host.
Yeah, oh man, okay, so we should call, okay, so we can call a friend. So, idea number one, we could probably call the police.
What if we called Ken Jennings?
Ken Jennings
is also...
He's
done podcasts before.
Yeah, you know what, hang on, let's, okay.
Sorry, it's a Bialik week.
Ah, darn it. You know, we could call that other podcast.
Hold on, which one? There's like so many podcasts. You need to be a little more specific, dude.
It's the one that's about horror, and it's Here.
Oh, you're talking about Here's Horror.
Yeah, Harmony and Horror, that's right. All right, so we're going to call Here's Horror now.
Beep,
right.
Boop, 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 boop,
boop,
beep, boop,
boop, boop, boop, boop.
Wait, do we have separate phones?
There's
two phones. It's two phone Tuesdays. It was a buy one, get one.
Oh, yeah.
A phone BOGO.
Next time, can you get phones that make the sound itself? I assume you're going to capture us again at some point.
Perhaps. Honestly, I might just, like, go do the whole sleep thing. So, like, I don't know if I need phones for that. Maybe alarm clocks. This is definitely not a sequel hook in any way, trust me, no.
Well, thank you very much, Sokobane. I guess we're gonna phone our friend now.
It's Sokobane. You have to enunciate the O.
Right, yeah,
it's not
sorry.
An ooh.
Sorry, Sokobane. So...
That's marginally better. It's better than Stuckobane.
I go in Stuckobane right
Goodbye.
Now.
Goodbye!
Alright, well...
I'm hanging up!
wait, you're coming through the phone?
Okay, but first, really, really quick fact corner. Really quick fact corner while we're in the corner before we actually dial them. Skinamarink is a movie released in 2022, directed by Kyle Edward Ball, with a tiny, tiny budget of $15,000. It is about two kids, Kevin and Kaylee, who are home alone one night and find that all the windows and doors of their house have disappeared. Then the lights stop working, and then things get worse. It is intentionally shot on sort of a film grain camera, and all of the shots are off kilter and rarely show a character's face or clearly frame a subject matter. It's very dark, shadowy, and intentionally obscured. And with that out of the way, let's go ahead and dial. Boop, 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 boop. Are you there? Are you on the line?
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Oh, thank
Hello?
God.
Great, good.
We're saved. You see, to talk about a horror movie, we had to talk to the experts. Here's Horror. Why don't you two introduce yourself?
Oh my goodness, that's us. So, my name is Moth.
I'm Tay.
And as they said, we are from Here's Horror. And so, can I introduce Here's Horror a little bit?
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, we are currently in a Saw trap, by the way. I don't know if you you know, just for clarification, but you know, please introduce your podcast
yes.
right now.
Yeah. Well, if we're in a saw trap, I will keep it brief because, you know, time is important.
Yes.
So Tay and I have been really close for years, but the main thing that we haven't shared is our feelings for horror movies. I have loved them for forever, and before Here's Horror started, Tay hadn't really been able to watch any of it. So they have entrusted me with the task of guiding them through the horror world to share all sorts of spooky fun films. And we talk about background of movies with common trigger warnings because we believe in experiencing horror safely. And I also like to find a lot of fun facts and things that might not be common knowledge even to horror buffs. So it's a safe space for everyone. And yeah, it's just a fun way to dive deeper into horror films for even the horror junkies out there. So we welcome everyone.
Now, I'm actually sort of curious here. So we don't really cover a lot of horror movies, but we've covered a lot of like web horror, internet horror, unfiction and stuff like that. Do you have any experience in that? Because some of that would help in this watching this movie, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, not a whole ton, but a little bit. Like, I have read a bunch of creepypastas, like the Russian Sleep Experiment, of course, and mostly mainstream ones, but I haven't really had much of a chance to dive into web horror too terribly much. And it's something I've been interested in, though.
I have, like, never really delved into any sort of web horror, but I am that person that's, like, up at 3 a.m, like, looking up weird shit on Wikipedia. So, I don't know if that counts, but that's basically my foray into web horror.
That's, yeah. That's, like, a step down the stairs.
Yeah, it's, like, I feel like it's, like, the build up to there. I'm just, like, too scared to, like, go any deeper. I'm just, you know, I'm up on the Wikipedia pages being like, oh, that's a little bit creepy, time to shut it for the night, go to sleep.
Some of my most formative horror memories were reading about horror games on TV Tropes and then probably getting more scared of the idea of them,
that's so fair.
They actually were scary.
Shout outs to reoccurring character, the TV Tropes page for Drakengard.
Yep. Oh,
we've talked about that at least 3 times now.
Oh, I love it. Nice. I should say, when it comes to horror games, I'm a huge baby. That's the one thing that I actually struggle quite a bit with.
Ah, nice. Cool. Yeah. You'll fit right in.
Don't worry. Eventually, you'll be able to overcome your fears and play Piglet's Big Game on the Nintendo GameCube.
Which, it is probably the best survival horror game on the GameCube, so...
I'm gonna need to explore this. I'm gonna buy it when we hop off.
Yeah, it's the time that Disney made an official survival horror game for kids.
Oh, wow.
That's the best news I've had all week.
Yeah.
They made two.
I will say that if we don't survive this saw trap, you can probably just have Marissa's copy, honestly.
Excellent. Sure. Excellent.
I don't know if I have my physical copy anymore.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
A piece of my childhood lost. That's disappeared, so which brings us to...
Disappeared? Oh, man. Skinamarink.
Whoa. Excellent. So, to break the ice into our Skinamarink discussion, I would love to hear what everyone would rate Skinamarink on 2 different scales. First, out of 1 to 10 spookies, and out of 1 to 10 in general.
All right, who wants to start? I feel like our guest should start.
Absolutely.
I'll happily start.
All right.
Perfect.
On the spooky scale, the spale, if you will. I personally would rate this one a 9 out of 10. I would not say that is a universal score, but as somebody who is very susceptible to this kind of horror, which we will get into later, this was hard to watch in broad daylight with a person right next to me, which was Matthew. Like, I was still very much in, like, I am looking at my phone and not the screen mode during certain portions of this movie.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very valid.
As a general movie, I would say I want to rate this as 8 of 10. Mm-hmm. I say 8 of 10, number one, if any of the viewers are familiar with the sort of like video game proclivity, the video game review score proclivities of like 7 of 10 in average, I don't mean it like that. Like, I mean 8 of 10 as in, like, I would rank this above a lot of movies I have seen. I would not rank this like top 10 movies necessarily or anything for me, but it is such a unique experience that is done so incredibly well. And like, I love it. I just like, I sit and ask myself, would I really watch it again? And honestly, a lot of it is just kind of like, I don't know that I would watch this, like, unless I was, you know, specifically showing somebody else to be like, oh, do you right. want to be scared out of your mind?
Do you want to lose your fucking marbles? That is a completely fair rating, and I would have to agree with you on both fronts, quite frankly. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. Like, I would say, out of spookiness, maybe a 7 out of 10. I think there were a lot of times where I was more so waiting, and
yeah.
the waiting was definitely tense in sort of an anxiety way, but more so in the sense that I was anticipating, I don't know, a time where something is going to happen. And I don't think the downtime's necessarily bad, but as far as spookiness goes, I think mm-hmm. it kind of drags at some points, especially early on.
Right.
As for, like, overall in general, I think an 8 out of 10 is pretty much what I would say as well.
Yeah.
It is very good, and it does a lot of very interesting things.
I agree.
But it's not, like, yeah. perfect.
You got some notes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I have plenty of notes.
Oh, yeah. That's reasonable. So, Tay, what are your ratings?
All right, guys. I mean...
I'm gonna kill all of you.
I'm giving it a 12 out of 10 on the spookiness scale. That scared the shit out of me. That's by far the scariest movie I've ever watched. It is... I'm someone that grew up, like, living, like, my bedroom was in a creepy-ass mm-hmm. basement, and so I understand how, for a lot of people, it can get, like, kind of, like, the scariness kind of goes away with this whole sitting and waiting aspect, but for me, like, that was my entire childhood, like, just sitting in my basement waiting for some shit to happen, because the vibes were off at all times, and so it really just reminded me of that. It took me back to that place.
And that's a weird place
so
to
it was
be.
Very... It's a weird place. It's like, it's the liminal space of it all. I don't know. Like, that whole movie felt like a liminal space.
Yeah, let's go liminal spaces.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it, like, and that, it's just, I don't know. It's like that vibe whenever you, like, go into, like, a mall or something and there's just, like, no one else there and you're just like, okay. Or, like, an empty airport at, like, 3 a.m. It's like that, like, weird feeling, but, like, times 100 was that movie. As for, like, the movie itself, I want to give it, like, I'm also going to go with an 8 out of 10. I feel like it's hard to make an experimental movie. I feel like it might be easier to make an experimental horror movie because you can kind of do some weird fuck shit with it and it kind of goes in horror law. Like, it is all fine. But I do think there could have been things that were done better. And yeah, I would also say, like, I have some notes on it, but I think the scariness of it all kind of takes away from the whatever was imperfect about it, just because I didn't even have time to care about the stuff that I was like, that could have been better.
It was just too effective.
It really was.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
That's so valid.
What about you, Moth? What would be your scales?
Okay, so bear in mind that my spooky scale is broken. I would say, even though it's broken, I would still call this probably a 6 or a 7, and that's high for me. And because it's just, it's same with Tay, like my, not the basement aspect necessarily, but my parents' house growing up, like, just spooked the shit out of me at night, and just, it still does, honestly, whenever I stay there, because there's some, like, weird energy in that house.
Yeah, like the giant picture of my brother's face.
that is a thing that exists in my home, correct? And so, but for those listening, it's not as creepy as it sounds. We're related. And my mom loves a good meme, so when... Anyway, I'm not going to get into why we have that. It's fine. But anyway, so yeah, just the feeling of being creeped out at night and just waiting for something to happen, and the way that this film is shot, it looks like the entire time it looks like your eyes are trying to adjust to the darkness. Yeah. And so it just pulled on a lot of those feelings of when I was uncomfortable and unsettled, like, at my home growing up. So it is very creepy. And, like, I've seen this. This is my second time watching this now. Watching it on a laptop screen with headphones is way scarier than watching it on a TV in fully in the dark. I don't know why. And so I was definitely more unsettled. But then, so 6 or 7 out of 10, I'll give it a 7 for spookies. And then I'm going to honestly, I'm going to bandwagon it and call it an 8 for in general. Yes. It's a really good movie. Yeah. So I think we're pretty solid. 8 out of 10 all Galen, around.
Galen Trendsetter Wilson over here.
Hell yeah.
Oh, you just dropped the last name.
No. Now people will be able to find me. Yeah.
Not like you didn't already use it on your TikTok and Twitter and all of your socials.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. So I was going to bring this up later, but I might as well say it now that, like, a big reason why I was so interested in this movie in the first place is that, like, as a kid, I could not fall asleep. It would take me, like, hours to do so.
Same.
And so I would just stare at my room in the dark, and things that I knew were completely harmless took on some other form of life as I was looking at them.
Yeah, I can't even say that in past tense. I still do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, there was this poster for the DreamWorks movie Madagascar that at a Denny's. And laying on my side looking at it, it looked like a creepy face because, like, the zebra's like fur on the back was like the teeth. And
oh my god.
It scared the hell out of me.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because it's DreamWorks Madagascar,
right?
One of the least scary things.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's so
and then
funny.
Like, I also had like a Hot Wheels shark tower that would make noise in the middle of the night randomly, and that would just freak me out.
That's okay. That's horrific.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, absolutely
that's
not.
That's a hard no.
Burn
for me.
Burn it. Throw the whole thing away.
Adding on to that, I always hated it when I was watching a DVD, would fall asleep, and then wake up to like the looping of the menu music.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So one part in particular of this movie really just, like, grabbed at my throat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, this whole movie is just fears I had as a kid that I've never really gotten over.
It really is.
Yeah. And that was kind of, like, Kyle Edward Ball's, like, whole thing with this is that's what he wanted to play on. So it sounds like he did it effectively.
Yeah. It's like, the whole, like, the things that were scary are all things that should normally be very just, like, innocent and just, like, whatever. It's, like, the toys keep getting messed with. They're just watching these, like, cartoons on the TV. He uses their parents to scare them. And it's, like, and they're in their own home. Like, everything about the environment and the things that are around them should scream, like, safety. Like, you're at home. You're with your toys. Like, here are your parents sitting on their beds. Like, these are totally, like, normal things that happen in your life. But somehow being, like, really little, only being in the dark, and, like, it was even scary before this voice, like, came and started taunting them, because the voice was only around for, like, maybe 5 minutes of the whole entire movie, like, collectively. And, but everything else still somehow was really scary. It's that, oh my god, the, like, telephone car thing with the eyeballs, like, and it didn't even do anything other than it is dark and then there's a flashlight on it, like, and somehow that was, like, one of the most terrifying moments
of
the entire movie.
I'm not even kidding. That part made me physically nauseous. Just, like, the eyes in the dark. I'm like, fuck that.
I laughed when that showed up because, like, that's such a typical scary children's toy. Like, even Toy Story played off of that.
It did, yeah.
And so I couldn't help but be like, okay, come on.
Yeah.
All right, but it does have the follow-up scare where it, like, stops making its normal face and, like, looks directly at the camera with a more sinister smile.
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie to you, that's honestly, like, one of my least favorite things, though. I didn't love that it did that because it kind of took me out of the suspension of disbelief a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair, that's fair.
Yeah. But...
yeah. That kind of brings me to a major point here is... as far as, so this is a movie that is very vague in terms of everything. Like, the shots are never centered on a character. Or they're rarely centered on sort of what you think they should be. They're always at awkward angles. It's so dark. But also, like, the events itself are left very vague. And I can't help but do this thing where I compartmentalize it as, like, there is the real events, the metaphor events, and then, like, the dream events. And those are all three separate things that exist in the same movie. I don't think there's, like, a true telling of events here.
No, and it's so hard to parse out, like, what's actually happening and what's not. And, like, that just honestly brings up a good point about, like, all the fan theories about this movie that I would, like, love to talk about what we think is going on here in terms of...
Yes.
Is it all... I have a very important question. Is it all just a concussion-induced fever dream? Because in the beginning... Kevin hits his head, right, and has to go to the hospital. Or is there actually, like, a monster happening? Or, like you were saying, it is three different things. Like, I don't fucking know.
So, yeah, I don't know if it's all Kevin having a concussion.
Right.
Because it feels like the entire first half of the movie is from Kaylee's perspective.
That's true.
About Kaylee's anxieties.
Mm-hmm.
And then once she disappears, it switches to Kevin being sort of the protagonist.
That's true. So that kind of debunks the concussion fever dream theory, right?
But it could still be sort of two separate nightmares being had.
That's true. It definitely could.
I would say, personally, I would say my interpretation leans more towards the literal. But I do think that the literal explanation itself is definitely fueled by a lot of the, like, anxieties and the you know, other theories surrounding it. In that, like, the voice, what I'm going to just dub the Skinamarink. it does not. The monster of this movie does not have a specific name, but. Like, the voice itself, I think, is definitely playing off of a lot of the anxieties of these two children. We learn pretty early on, for example, that Kaylee doesn't really want to talk about their mother.
Right.
Which, you know, like, implies either, like, a strained relationship or, in, like, a, you know, just, like, maybe simply they lost her and... You know, a young person doesn't really know how to compartmentalize that.
Right.
But the Skinamarink definitely understands, like, that the mother, like, makes her uncomfortable and is something to play off of. Which is why, you know, then later she ends up seeing her mother. Which is, like, you know, again, I personally interpret that more as sort of, like, the monster itself messing with her.
That is exactly how I interpreted it, too, because it's, like, common, quote-unquote, common house demon shit, where, like, it reads your mind and plays on your specific fears. So, yeah, I kind of read it the same way as you did. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, like, in the literal, the most I could say is that this is a long set of nightmares and imagination done by two kids who are home alone at night.
Right.
Because that is essentially what I've experienced as a kid in the past. But yeah, I definitely trend more towards there is a direct supernatural series of events. Which, by the way, if I was like some omnipotent being, I would not torment two children. I would like make anime real or something.
Yeah.
Like, this is a waste of time.
Oh my god. There's so For many. Real. He literally says at one point in the movie that he can do anything. You're so right. There's so many other more fun uses of your time. Leave the fucking kids alone. My god.
Yeah.
Go bother like Elon Musk or something. Like, what?
What the hell?
Yeah, if I was an omnipotent demon that could trap people in their house, I would I might do Mark Z. Danielewski just for, you know, the meme of it. But, like, Elon Musk or, like, Jeff Bezos. Like, come on. Pick better targets.
Go fuck up a billionaire. Yeah. What are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
No, literally the whole time we were watching, I was like, they're children, yeah. Leave them alone. Like, what's the point? Yeah. Like, I don't get it. Just, like, let them be in their house by themselves. Yeah. But
I think sort of the main, from the Kaylee side of things, I think the main sort of fear here is that, yeah, they lost their mom, and Kaylee now feels like she has to be, like, the big sister here. Mm-hmm. And so she does a lot of things specifically to protect Kevin.
Right.
Like, the fact that when they first hear things going on upstairs, Kaylee goes up there alone because she doesn't want Kevin to fall down the stairs again.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And then with Kevin, I think a lot of it is he doesn't want to be hurt again, which the demon specifically plays on.
Right.
And, like, Kevin just is too young to really understand a lot of things.
Yeah. Exactly.
He just kind of does what he's told eventually.
Right. And this honestly kind of brings me to a really interesting theory that some people have talked about, with this movie being a possible allegory for child abuse.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk about it, like, kind of briefly. We can keep this part very short just because it's a massive fucking bummer. But I do think it's important to talk about. So, some people wonder if the voice is supposed to represent, like, the missing parents and, like, their relationship with those parents. And this movie, like, is kind of how a child might cope with abuse, right? So completely dissociating from it and turning their abuser into a monster in their minds. Or, like, the children are given demands and they're punished if they don't meet those demands. Like, for example, when the voice tells them to hurt themselves some way and warns them that if they don't, they'll still get harmed, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, it's very clear that they're uncomfortable in their home where they're supposed to feel safe. And the coping mechanisms that they use are, like, all too common. Like, playing with toys, watching TV, which are, like, really common escapism tactics, even for small children. And the windows and doors disappearing, they might be a literal visual representation of, like, feeling trapped in that situation. So
yeah.
I just found that to be a very interesting lens to watch this movie through, because I didn't know about that the first time I watched it, and I wasn't as unsettled that time. But then thinking about that while watching it this time with Tay, I was just like, that makes this so much more fucked up.
Right.
That I can definitely see that reading, and I feel like that that is something that plays off of another a reading that I was thinking about as well, which was essentially the monster as kind of an allegory for I'll say the mother's death. We don't get confirmation of any of, like, what happened to the mother, but it's not terribly difficult to theorize that the mother herself was dead in the movie, given some of the clues that were present. And I had a kind of a part of me that was wondering if the monster was kind of a allegory for, like, the specter of death over a house after the death of a loved one, especially for, you know, a child that's so young and, like, can't fully understand certain concepts yet.
I could totally see that as well. Yeah, because that's something that a child, especially if it's their parent, like, definitely wouldn't know how to reconcile with, and you would almost, like, have to dissociate from it, you know?
Yeah. Right. Which would be why it sort of, specifically, it drew Kaylee away from Kevin and, like, separated them. And then with Kevin, it was entirely about pain, pretty much.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas Kaylee, it was more about things further than just being harmed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the mother's death is something that we discussed a lot, like, right after we watched the movie. One thing that Galen mentioned is that when Kaylee goes up to the bedroom, you don't really see the mother at first, but then you do. But then when she looks back, it's just the mother's gone and the, like, desk lamp is there.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's a really sort of poignant imagery of, like, the place where the mom would be sleeping is just vacant now. And I think later on, towards, like, the very end, it cuts back to the living room and there's two lamps there. Almost like the lamps are also being used as a sort of representation of, like, a headstone.
Oh, that is very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I personally hadn't interpreted it as she had passed away. I interpreted it as, like, they got a divorce and she left them. Because, like, in the very beginning of the movie when Kevin falls and hits his head, that the dad calls someone and is like, he's fine, but he fell down the stairs kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I had assumed that he was calling the mom. And then later, whenever I think it's the first time that Kaylee goes upstairs to the bedroom and the Skinamarink, as we'll call him, he is called the voice in the dark in the script, just BT dubs. But the Skinamarink, when he's mimicking them, she says something about your father and I, and then she trails off. And I kind of assumed that it was like replaying events, like traumatic events to Kaylee, like finding out that her parents are getting divorced kind of thing, or that she was leaving them. Yeah, that's how I interpreted it. But the your interpretation is very interesting.
That definitely crossed my mind, too.
I feel like, especially if, like, at that age and just like what we know about how divorce courts work and how usually their kids are given to their moms whenever divorces happen, or like moms get full custody, and the fact that they're with their dad seemingly full time, it's like we can, if it is a divorce, it's we can determine that the mom left and is gone, like is just gone, not necessarily in their lives. So I feel like whether it is a divorce or a death, having a parent just be gone, especially at that age, it's almost the same, kind of, because at that age you can't really understand death or like process it in the same way that you can now. So it's, I feel like it's almost the same feelings of grief and trauma. It's like your parent is gone, one way or the other. So, but I also read it as a divorce, like the recap thing, because she's like, your father and I love you, you know, your father and I love you very much, and that kind of stuff. And that sounded like, as a child of divorce, sounded like a divorce announcement from a parent. So, but I do think it could be read either way. And I think both would be just as impactful almost.
My theory that the mother was dead, I definitely did think it was divorce early on, because a lot of the points that you've brought up of, like, the, you know, the mother saying, you know, your father and I, and kind of, like, trailing off, and, like,
the phone call.
The phone call at the very beginning is, honestly, I genuinely feel like the phone call at the very beginning is at least partially meant to make you think that it's, you know, a divorce situation. Until sort of later in the film. But I personally ended up just reading more into, like, Kaylee being upset and Kaylee being, you know, really hesitant to talk about the mother, and being more surprised about the mother, like, actually being there. I ended up just thinking, like, I think that's meant to more lean towards the mother is no longer in the picture, literally.
Right.
But, you know, I'm also certainly not going to sit here and say that anything in this movie has one answer, because goodness me, it
definitely doesn't. Yeah. Which, it's interesting that you say that, because so the writer-director, Kyle Edward Ball, he has mentioned that, like, he loves all of the different theories about this movie and all of the speculation around different parts, like exactly what we're talking about. And he has literally said that everyone is simultaneously correct and incorrect all at the same time.
Nice. Cool move. Yes.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
AKA, he doesn't even know what the fuck's going on.
Yep.
I wanted to bring up a few specific ways that the Skinamarink sort of tortures the kids and sort of the implications of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the first big thing is that a lot of, like you mentioned earlier, features of sort of comfort are removed. It was, right. It was funny because, like, when the toilet disappeared, Galen was like, why would they do that?
Yeah.
But I think it contributes to, like, the house as a home is losing so much of its functionality of being comforting.
Right, exactly.
Likewise, the nightlight in the hallway going out and just disappearing eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The move over sort of the first act of the movie from a normal house to a completely separate sort of nightmare mansion is very interesting.
But it is.
I think the main one is flipping items and, like, attaching them to the ceiling.
That's, yeah.
Yes.
So
that's the thing.
On one hand, this could be sort of an echo of Kevin falling. These objects mm-hmm. are falling upwards in this case.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, and this is where another big content warning comes in, I think this did contribute to the mom being dead sort of reading.
Oh.
Because, like, one of the items that Kaylee sees in the bedroom that's on the ceiling is, like, a Barbie doll.
Oh, yes. My- yeah. Yeah. So you think, like, a, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And, yeah. Okay, yeah. And, like, when the chair is, like, on the ceiling, it's got the feet on the ceiling, right? But whenever, and everything else is, like, if it were on the floor, but on the ceiling, you know, like, flipped.
Yeah.
But with the Barbie, it's hanging.
Yeah.
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 Least favorite part of the movie, by the way.
That's valid.
Yeah.
The Barbie jump scare is probably the one moment that the one moment I slightly soured on after the fact, just because I was like, okay, come on, that was cheap.
I agree. You didn't. I do agree with
you
that.
Didn't earn that. like so many other like I genuinely think this was like an 8 of 10 spooks movie for me that became a 9 of 10 as I sat on it.
Yeah.
The Barbie jump scare was the one moment that was like an 8 of 10 scare that became like a 7 of 10 as I sat right. on it and went, that was cheap.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. Yeah, because a lot of the scares in this movie are so genuinely just fucked up and unsettling.
Yes.
For him to throw in like something like that where like it was already creepy that it was hanging from the ceiling like that, but when you add it falling with like the scream jump scare aspect of it, it definitely feels like a cheap scare.
Yeah,
like that didn't need to happen. It was already uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's an interim release of tension.
Yeah,
but it was also just like, okay, come on.
It does bring up a good point that I hadn't thought about with like the whole mom death thing, about how, you know, Kaylee sees this Barbie happening, but then whenever she goes downstairs and Kevin's like, what did you see upstairs? She doesn't want to talk about it.
True.
Which leads me to believe that if something did happen to their mom, maybe Kaylee was present or aware of what happened, and that might have a lot to do with some of the trauma she experiences later, or how the skinamarink is messing with her. So I hadn't thought about that until we were recapping Barbie. Oh my gosh. Where was she in the Barbie movie? I'm
She was weird Barbie, obviously.
okay.
New terrifying Barbie.
Is, oh my god. Skinamarink Barbie.
oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh Jesus.
I have to say, I think the part that was the most spooky for me was Presto Changeo.
Yes.
Yes. Oh my god. Just that part just repeating over and over again. Because at first it's just like, oh, it's glitching a little bit. But then it like keeps happening and gets faster. And it's just weirdly effective how unsettling that is.
And then you realize what's happening as it's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Presto Changeo as well, because it is present at previous points in the movie, like slightly more subtly. If I remember correctly, at the beginning of the movie, like Presto Changeo ends up playing like the implication I read from it after the fact is like, the monster himself ends up actually, like, watching on the TV that particular moment, as the family is out, during, like, you know, when Kevin hits his head. Which also, I've seen a reading that essentially Kevin actually met the monster beforehand, and he was not sleepwalking, he was pushed.
That's what I thought, too.
Yeah, because he was playing hide-and-seek at the very beginning. He's like, are you hiding? And then starts counting. And so I thought, because whenever I watched that scene, I was like, obviously creeped out. And then I was like, oh, they're playing hide-and-seek, like, at night, which they shouldn't be doing. But, like, and then he falls down the stairs, and then Kaylee seems to not have been, like, there for the whole thing. So I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought was going on, too. And, like, Kaylee, oh my god, it's another thing of Kaylee like protecting Kevin by saying that he was sleepwalking, so that maybe, I don't know, if like she said that he had been playing, he might have gotten in trouble or something, but also she's like, I don't want to tell Dad about the weird fucking demon in our
house. Yeah. Like,
he's going to think I'm fucking crazy. Yeah. Oh my God.
I want to really shout out these kids, by the way.
The, oh, incredible kids, actors.
So great.
Yeah, incredible actors, and like,
yes.
In terms of like characters in a horror movie that didn't deserve the fate they got.
It's for real.
These
for
kids real. Did everything right.
They like, literally did.
Weird shit starts happening and they're like, we're gonna try and call the police. We're gonna try and mm-hmm. call, like, you know, our you know, grandma or whatever.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. he types out, like, an actual phone. He doesn't just go straight, or she, whoever's dialing the phone, doesn't go straight to 911 at the beginning. They, like, dial out a whole phone number. And I even yeah. said that. I was like, man, these are smart kids. Like, they know someone's phone number to call. And it just yeah. didn't go through. Yeah. But yeah, no, I was like, they really know. Like, their parents have told them what to do if there's an emergency. Which yeah. also, like, it kind of, I guess, I don't want to say takes away from the whole, like, child abuse allegory. Because it's like, if, you know, there were parents that were actively abusing their children, they probably wouldn't try to tell them how to contact the police if there was an emergency. Right. You know what I mean? They'd be like, do not do that.
Right, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have an adult somewhere that That's taught
true.
Them that.
That's true. But, or, like, school. I know schools teach kids how to call the yeah. police. So.
But at the same time, like, if it's just in a school setting or an adult that you don't live with, like, mm-hmm. if you're just told that, like, once or twice, it wouldn't necessarily be as ingrained as, like, maybe an adult that you live with that cares about you a lot and, like, mm-hmm. is telling you, like, hey, reminder, this is what you do if something bad happens. So mm-hmm. I kind of agree with you that it sort of is a minus one point for the child abuse theory.
Put it on the board. Opinion.
Put it on the board.
But I do think possibly plus one point for dead mom theory, because, yeah. you know, if something yeah. traumatic happened to their mom, then the dad's going to be like, this is how you call the freaking police if you ever need to call the freaking police.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Or like, if the dad, if something happens to the dad, the kids need to know who else to call.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Very good point.
Mm-hmm. So there are two other sort of main things I wanted to bring up. Mm-hmm. One of which, by the way, I had to say this. We see the doors disappear.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I felt like the way it disappeared is very Teletubbies.
I agree yeah. with that.
This is another thing I was so scared of as a kid, was like there were two Teletubbies segments that just freaked me out and I never wanted to see them on TV again.
Oh my God, what were they? I have to know.
I don't remember. One of them no. involved, like, a house with, like, a shadow in the windows, I think.
Ugh.
I don't exactly remember. Or it was, like, somebody peeking out of the windows.
Mm-hmm. Hate that.
But I could be misremembering it in a child fugue state, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's also
is creepy.
that was also something that I was wondering, is I wonder if this is just, like, the culmination of one night and, like, these kids remembering it that happened in the past. And it's, like, things that, you know, you remember things from your childhood where you're like, oh my God, that was so scary and fucked up. But in reality, it was just 2 a.m. and you were, like, wandering out to get a glass of water or right. something like that. It's, like, what if they wake up in the middle of the night, their dad is gone for some reason. Mm-hmm. And then it's just one night of them sleeping in the living room. And the way that they're remembering it in the past is just that, like, all this fucked up shit happened. But in reality, it didn't. Because, I don't know, I have so many memories from childhood that I'm just like, oh, this was so traumatic. But in reality, it probably wasn't.
Right. I could see that. I could see that as an interesting reading of, like, you know, maybe not. Maybe the events seen are not a literal retelling, obviously, in this scenario. But, like, I could see it being, like, you know, Kevin hurt, you know, accidentally got hurt in the middle of the night. And, like, mm-hmm. For some reason, you know, Kaylee, like, couldn't really get a hold of anyone. And so she mm-hmm. had to take responsibility. Like, yeah, I could see that being a interesting reading of just, like, this is kind of mm-hmm. the... A one big childhood trauma night of, like, yeah. you know, something terrible happened and it just seemed like there wasn't any escape from it and no right. one picked up and, you know, dad wasn't there, Kevin yeah, gets yeah. hurt, et cetera, et cetera.
Ooh.
Yeah. Because if Kevin does have a concussion, like him being four and then also having a concussion, he's automatically an unreliable narrator. So like if we're saying that like the bottom half of this is from Kevin's point of view, like we have no idea what's real and what isn't because he's four and is concussed. So
that's true.
Who knows what the hell he's actually seeing and thinking and doing.
Maybe he did really infinitely bleed out on the floor.
Yeah. Yeah.
He did just
over and over.
Yeah.
So
possibly
the last main thing I wanted to bring up, 562 days.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
With like zoom out of the hallway, this like infinite hallway with all the toys like built up on the ceiling. That really confused me. I was like, what?
I'm like, what is going? And then, is this like a Krampus situation where he like plucked this house into his snow globe, but the snow globe is like an infinite hallway in a void that he just has for himself? What the fuck?
Yeah, because I remember seeing that and being like, oh, this is the end. And then there was still like 15 minutes left. Yeah, and I was like, what? Like, what are you talking about? Yeah, I have no idea. I've seen like in my like quick Google searches that it's like Kevin's been in a coma this whole time and it's been that long since he's been in a coma and this is all just a coma induced nightmare or whatever, but I don't buy it. I don't know. I feel like it's got to be something else. Well,
I read that the director Ball, was it? Didn't include the word later because he didn't want to imply the explicit passage of time.
Right.
Yeah,
because it never really says how long it's been. We know the kids are getting up and going to bed at certain times. We don't know if they're, like, kids take naps during the day, you know what I mean? We don't know if their biological clock is, like, actually, you know, being awake for however many hours, sleeping for, like, 8 hours, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we don't know what it looks like outside because all the windows are gone. So we have no idea what day, if it's the day, if it's the night.
Yeah,
exactly.
Kaylee even just directly says, I think it's time to get up now.
Yeah.
And I was, there's a clock in the background of that scene, and I was desperately trying to read it, but it's so small that I could not tell what time it was. And I was trying so hard.
I love the 572 days bit. I love the latter 15 minutes of this movie because, like, one, it is heartbreaking in the best way. It is. Yes. So, like, oh man, I've seen a couple of different theories on the 572 days. Like, for example, there's just most straightforward is that the kids have been here at this point for 572 days. I've also seen like the hallway and of the hallway of shit, as it were, as like people reading that's to imply that like the monster has done this multiple times to multiple different children. Which is kind of corroborated by like all of the photos that are blurred out. I feel like they're the two major ways you can really read that are either like those are memories of these two small children slowly eroding, or they're like other children that the Skinnamarink has presto changed away,
right?
Like, you know, and to his weird torture lair, his you know void in the middle of realms.
Yeah, and I'm honestly kind of leaning more towards it being other children that he's done this to, because like a couple of those were like babies, like a lot younger than four, so.
And it seemed like they were, like, different time periods, almost.
They did.
Like, some of them looked like they were in, like, old-fashioned, like, almost, like, Victorian gowns, and others were, like, you know, more modern. They're on, like, the swing sets and stuff like that. But, I mean, I don't know. Some people dress their babies up and that kind of stuff, so I guess it could be anything. But, yeah, I wonder if it's, like, this demon has been around for that many days, if that's how many days in total he has been doing this to kids, like if you like tallied all of them up. That's weird.
I mean, it looks like that's where all the stuff it took away goes, all like the vanished toys. But I remember looking at it because there's like a TV in the center, and then things that looked like hands on either side. Oh. And it felt to
me
like
the hands.
Maybe I was just viewing things in the dark wrong. But I thought I saw, like, a foam finger, almost.
Ugh.
Something like that. But It felt to me almost like this is the closest we're getting to the representation of the monster visually. Like, it's not a direct representation, but it is like an amalgam created out of the memories of these other children.
Yeah.
Like, because we barely even see anything. At the very end, there's like a smiley Fry that you can kind of make out.
Yeah. I hated him.
But I think in some ways, the more sort of apparent imagery of the monster is just the vanished toys and the TV and constructing them all together at the very end there, I think, sort of hammered that home. That it doesn't really matter what it looks like. It's more about sort of how it enacted its torture and the ways it manifested itself.
Yeah.
Speaking of long hallways... So, House of Leaves. We're doing Housetober, which is House of Leaves and things inspired by House of Leaves.
That's so cool.
So, here's what you need to know about House of Leaves. Other than the fact that it is a book about a guy who finds a manuscript about a movie, about a haunted house, where the house is bigger on the inside, and it also has a hallway that leads off into a sort of infinite black labyrinth. It may be Yggdrasil, it may just be a haunted house. You can already see the connection of, like, a dark, shadowy house, an extremely long hallway, as they call it, the 5.5-minute hallway, because that's how long it took to walk it the first time.
Goddamn.
One big part of House of Leaves is that the sort of hallway and the further labyrinth have, like, none of the features of a house, none of the comforts. There's, like, no lighting, no wiring, no air conditioner, heating, furniture. It's, like, a 5-page footnote that goes into everything it doesn't have. And I think that connects back to sort of how Skinamarink is heavily centered around the idea of taking a place that should be comfortable and, like, systematically removing all forms of comfort. The hostile house, if you will.
That's very interesting.
A big part of House of Leaves itself is that, like, the house itself is sort of the monster. The monster is, like, there is no monster waiting in the depths of the house. The house itself is that monster that you're looking at, you're fearing. And while Skinamarink doesn't, like, have a direct, you know, one-to-one correlation there, there is just sort of literally some kind of monster. I do feel like in a reading where the monster is more metaphorical, it could kind of align with this, where, like, the house itself has some kind of trauma associated with it that weighs down so heavily on the children. And so, like, you know, I like readings of things that interpret, like, inanimate objects as having some kind of agency, having some kind of, motive, so to speak. And so, like, that's why I just sort of wanted to bring up, I feel like House of Leaves could just simply add to a reading of this particular movie.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I haven't really looked into it too terribly much. Have you found that the writer and director, like, directly based things off of House of Leaves? Or is it just that, like, there's a lot of connections that can be made between the two?
The latter. Yeah.
That's still such a cool, like, read on this.
There is another way this connects, though.
Yes.
So in House of Leaves, the actual story of the haunted house is depicted in the form of a movie, a found footage movie. Called The Navidson Record. And when I first read House of Leaves, and for the longest time, I thought The Navidson Record would have been, like, a shitty ass movie, because most of it takes place in a house that is completely dark with nothing that's really able to make out except, like, door frames and handles. and like you can barely see people's faces from half the time. And can you see what I'm getting at?
I see exactly what you're getting at. So that's essentially literally Skinamarink.
Yeah, well, there have been sort of discussions on having House of Leaves become an actual movie. I feel like Skinamarink is the closest we've ever gotten to it. And it's funny because House of Leaves being this like satirical critical work about a fake movie, it includes bits about the reception to the movie. And while people in the world of House of Leaves were mainly positive or interested, though a lot of people thought it was just schlock and nothing, a big part was like a big part of attention is put towards sort of the amateur nature of it. I feel like the reception to Skinamarink in real life is like the complete opposite. And I kind of love that.
No, you're exactly right. People
hate this movie.
People fucking shit on this movie. Which is so interesting to me because, like, when it got leaked, people were losing their fucking minds. They were like, this is the coolest thing ever. So it got really good word of mouth review. And then when it got to theaters, people shat on it.
Because I think in a lot of ways, this is sort of one of the first... one of the first movies that released in theaters that takes a ton of cues from web horror and unfiction like that. Like, this has a lot of energy from, like, Marble Hornets. Obviously, there's, like, the shaky cam parts feel very found footage. But there's a lot of analog horror elements. I mean, internet horror is kind of obsessed with Robert Hose era animation as well. It's so interesting because to me, it fits a lot of my sensibilities, but I could totally see how people who were raised on like The Exorcist or The Thing wouldn't be as into it.
Your average moviegoer, it's not something that they're really interested in seeing. It's just like sitting and waiting for something to happen. But if you're like kind of invested in this kind of storytelling or... like you were saying, like with internet horror and things like that, like it's perfect. It's really well done. But yeah, it's just not something that a lot of people are used to or willing to digest, quite frankly.
Skinamarink, I feel like Skinamarink was doomed to be a cult hit. I use that wording choice deliberately for humor's sake. But yeah, because like it makes a lot of sense that it is as divisive as it is. Even as somebody who like is all like so many times willing to take everything at, you know, its own word, and like, you know, really dig into like, what is the person trying to say here? You know, is this a good way of doing it? As somebody who loves this movie, I definitely understand why people did not enjoy it, or at least why a lot of people didn't enjoy it. I did, of course, make the mistake of reading actual reviews, and that's never...
My God. Reviews for this movie are fucking obnoxious, because people... Oh my God. I raged about this to my partner for several minutes, because like some people who don't like it are just like being whiny about it. Like, you can dislike things. That's okay, obviously. But... they're especially whiny about this movie if they don't like it. But then people who are trying to defend it sound pretentious as all fuck.
It really is. It really is just kind of a very horseshoe theory. I feel like there's a very comfortable medium here of like, it's an incredibly non-standard movie, so it's fine to not like it. But at the same time, like, you have to sort of... you have to be able to acknowledge those and then also, and then still like it past that. Because it's like, again, 8 out of 10 movie. I love this movie. I would never, I legitimately am like, now that we've seen it, I don't know if this is going on my movie wheel rotation, even as, like, the people that it's going to be spooky to, it's going to be way too spooky to in some instances. And the people it's not going to be spooky to are going to be bored out of their minds.
Exactly.
Like many of my favorite things, this falls squarely in the realm of I like it, but I cannot recommend it.
That's fair.
Simply because I don't know the tastes of a general audience.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
exactly.
If I knew that somebody already liked things like Marble Hornets and Pets Cop, then sure, I'll recommend Skinamarink.
Mm-hmm.
But for, like, you know, just, you know, Joe on the street.
Yeah.
Probably not. Yeah, because a lot of people, if you're not willing to, or if you're not wanting necessarily to take the time to kind of pick apart this movie and think a little bit deeper about it,
mm-hmm.
it's hard to gain that appreciation because it is such a drawn out and slow, and with it being an experimental film, it's hard for a lot of people to get through it at all.
Yeah.
It's a weird movie.
It is a weird movie.
I know that this isn't going to cause any, like, massive trends. It was a success, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
It had a $15,000 budget, so it was going yeah. to be a success if, like, if they sold VHSs yeah. on the street, it would have been a success. Yeah.
They made $2.1 million off of this. They're fine.
Yeah. yeah. But I really hope this, like, leads to, you know, other kind of cult hits in a similar vein that can refine yeah. these ideas. Mm-hmm. You know,
absolutely.
I would love to see somebody pick up, I would love to see somebody pick up, like, a current web horror project and make, like, the Mandela Catalog movie, you know?
Mm, right, yeah.
Honestly, I feel like the upcoming Iron Lung movie might be in this vein.
Oh, God, which, I forgot.
Yeah, the Iron Lung movie, which is being bankrolled by fucking Markiplier.
What? Yeah. Oh, wait, no, I did hear about this. Wasn't there, I read something about how, like, he tweeted something about they used more blood in this movie than any movie ever before. And, like, including The Shining.
Wow.
Just, like,
yeah. The Shining has an elevator full, but we've got, yeah. like, an entire ocean of blood.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
Markiplier, my beloved.
I can't wait for nothing to happen in the Iron Lung movie and for people to be pissed about that one. Yeah.
It's gonna be great.
Oh, goodness.
It's a game yeah. where you look at coordinates on a submarine.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, with all of that, I'm sure we have some final thoughts before we wrap up. Do we want to run through those real quick and then sign off?
Yeah. Do you two want to start since we started the sure. intro here?
Sure, ooh, I'll go ahead. So the first time that I watched this movie, I went away from it just thinking, what the fuck did I just watch, right? And I was honestly a little bit disappointed, and I wasn't sure if I would watch it again, because I was, like, one of those people that was like, there's really nothing that happens in this movie. But walking away, the more I thought about it, it's probably one of the most intriguing horror movies that I've seen in a very long time. And I'd definitely watch it again, quite frankly, and I'm still sort of mentally working through what this movie actually is, even with all that we've talked about. Like, I have more to think about now,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to occupy a lot of my brain space. So if you're thinking about watching this movie, I highly recommend fully immersing yourself in it so you can get the full experience of it and, like, watch it on your laptop at 3 a.m. with your headphones turned all the way up. Fuck up your brain with this movie. It's a great time. Highly recommend.
I'm really annoyed right now because so whenever we finished this movie, literally I was like, thank God I never have to do that ever again. But now that we've been talking about it, I'm like, God, I have to rewatch it. So I can, like, think more about it, because I feel like I spent half the time hiding behind my hands and I didn't really get the full, you know, immersion of it. And so now right. that I know when the scary parts are going to be, I feel like I need to rewatch it so I can, like, get it. So, like, my brain can, like, go into full, like, 100 mode and, like, put all the pieces together. We're going to come back and I'm going to give you all the answers. That's what's going to happen after
perfect.
I rewatch it.
Yes.
But that means I have to rewatch it, which is really annoying. So yeah, I guess I'll let you guys know how that experience goes.
No nightmares, though. That's
no
the
nightmares.
Only thing that's not allowed.
So, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Everything that I would have nightmares about in this movie is something that I've already dealt with, thankfully. Yeah. I've already gone through the trauma of looking at that phone toy.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
So as for myself, Skinamarink is extremely non-standard, and so I can understand walking away with a sour taste in your mouth, but just personally, I cannot help but love this movie. I think it is both an amazing tone piece that captures like a very vulnerable, like childish fear in a really interesting way. And I also love it as an adaptation of web horror and web series and internet horror. It is an incredibly slow build. It requires a certain mindset, but like Moth said, I feel like if you really immerse yourself, like watch it at a laptop really early in the morning, if what we have described sounds interesting and you haven't yet watched it, please watch it. We haven't even touched on a lot of the visual aspects, like how it's, you know, it's specifically shot, I believe, in some kind of like VHS style format, mm-hmm. to really play with the lows and highs of the shadows and stuff. It is a visual delight. It is a scary movie, and I would probably, I will never watch it again by myself, but if I found somebody who really wanted to watch an interesting horror movie, I would not hesitate to recommend it.
I still have no idea what a merink is, much less why I would skin one.
Much less how to skin one, you know?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
So, I guess you would skin it in the same way you would skin a Leonard. So, yeah.
Bye, I'm done.
This movie is, like, really cathartic for me. It's like somebody just took a shovel and dug out a whole bunch of childhood memories and mm-hmm. filtered them through like a film grain effect. It's so viscerally like I don't know, it just was like full of flashbacks to me. I connected with it so hard and I loved it for that, and like the style of it is perfect for me. But mm-hmm. like I said, it's so hard to recommend this to people without sort of knowing beforehand what their tastes are.
Right.
It's great, but for me specifically.
if there's one thing I would say, I do think that it has an audience. Like, yeah, like absolutely. we've mentioned. Us. Yeah.
Four people.
It's weird, it's niche horror people, and it's also, like, web horror people. It's, you know, mm-hmm. I don't want to draw specific parallels to Blair Witch, but, like, you know, there's so many. Yeah, it has a lot of that vibes. Like, it feels like it scratches a similar niche of, like,
absolutely
being something, you know, that kind of came out of nowhere, was done with a very low budget, but was done in such a very interesting and artistic way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In 8 years, this is going to be heralded as, like, I don't know, defining.
Yeah.
That's my call. That's my called shot.
Absolutely. We'll check back in 8 years and see if you were right.
Yes.
Yeah. Should be easy enough. Yeah. So, with all of that, if you want to watch a weird fucking movie, if you're tired of all of the horror movies you're watching feeling like the same thing, and you want to watch something that is just fucking bizarre and has you questioning your whole existence and feels like a liminal space, watch Skinamarink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
I can't say it's a good time, but it certainly is a time.
It's a time. It is one of the movies of all time.
Roughly 562 days.
Roughly... But add 10 to that.
Yeah, give or take 10 days.
Hey, I said take roughly.
10. Yeah. You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Only one number is wrong there, so, you know.
Exactly.
2 out of 3 ain't bad.
2 out of 3 ain't bad, no. All right. So, with all of that, do we want to round robin go through where to find Here's Horror and Net Surfer Pro?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Excellent. Where can the people find Net Surfer Pro?
You can follow us on any podcasting platform you like, Net Surfer Pro. Give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know what you want us to cover or what you think we'd be interested in. If there's any very particular web horror-inspired horror movies that we should check out. You can also follow us on Twitter at Net Surfer Pro, where we tweet little emoji teasers on upcoming episodes. And this is the last one of Housetober, but I believe I had a teaser already for the next episode post-tober. So you could check that out and see if you can figure it out. It's still vaguely House of Leaves related, but it's not directly House of Leaves related.
All right.
Very cool.
It's in the same wheelhouse.
Ooh, very fun.
House of Wheels.
House of Wheels.
Perfect. Tay, where can the people find Here's Horror?
You can find Here's Horror on Twitter at Here's Horror, on Instagram at Here's Horror Podcasts, on Tumblr at Here's Horror. Send us your favorite Skinamarink memes on Tumblr.
Please do. I love them.
They're good. They're so funny. And you can also find us on Ko-fi at Here's Horror Podcasts, as well as anywhere that you can find podcasts. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc., etc.
Hell yeah, we post new videos, or not videos, I almost said, we've never posted a video in our lives. We post new episodes every other Wednesday, except during October, it was every Wednesday, but that'll be coming to a close here shortly. We do have one more episode coming out this month, though, so keep an eye out for that.
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome.
Happy spooky season, everyone.
Happy spooky season. No, you're totally fine. Season. Yeah, you're right. So with all of that being said, thank you so much to everyone for listening. And thank you to Tay, Matthew, Marissa, and Galen for watching and talking about Skinamarink with me.
Click!
Hold on, was that hyper-realistic Mario?
Wait a minute. Hang on a second. Hyper-realistic Mario? Hey, remember that camp off that we had a while back?
Oh my god. I got back here, you were doing so well without doing any sort of complicated narrative-driven intro-outro sequence. But you came and ruined it at the last second.
Wait a second.
I was getting ready to unlock your ankle braces and also remove the crossbow bolts and also plug all the holes in the wall and then maybe also just open the door.
Hang on a sec. So, holes in the wall, hyper-realistic Mario, ankle bracelets, train-cle bracelets. Wait a minute, that's not Sokobane, that's...
You got me.
Conductor Bane! Sorry, Train Conductor Bane, I believe?
Ride Operator Bane.
Ride Operator Bane!
They don't trust me to do the train around the park anymore.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Ride but I'm operator. Not a janitor anymore. I got promoted back to ride operator.
Well, that's good, but man, ride operator Bane, I can't believe that you would put us in a trap like this. You could have just talked to us.
Well, you see, you know how at the theme park I work at, they have haunted houses during October.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought, why not work on some sort of innovative new haunted house experience? Maybe I could submit that to the board and, you know, maybe get a promotion that way.
You know what? That's a fair point, actually. I'm willing to like leave a review here, honestly. I think you did pretty well. You know, all things considered, I was fearing for my ankles. The crossbow bolt did look quite real, realistic.
I just have to make sure though, is our parking covered, because we were here for a month.
Oh god, yeah.
You know what? That's part of the surprise. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. That's part of the horror experience.
Oh man, that is scary. The only thing scarier than my ankles getting chopped off is parking tickets.
Exactly. You know how it is.
I do.
But I am planning on doing that sleeping thing, because apparently this concoction worked very well. Yes, even though I'm a ride operator, I am still a bit of a chemist. That part of my character is still present in the background, I just haven't had a reason to bring it up.
Yeah, that, you know, I guess that does explain why you have the mask and everything still. Yeah. Aside from just being...
That's what the point of the mask is.
Sorry. That one got me.
Well, it seems like you're doing well, so I'll just leave you be.
Can you like unlock the ankle bracelets and the, you know, the crossbow and the holes and stuff?
Oh, that's the thing. They were never locked.
Oh my goodness, what a twist!
Dun dun dun!
Also, the door was locked though, so you still couldn't leave the room.
Ah, fair. And we were asleep for most of it, aside from like about an hour each week. So
pretty much, yeah. You didn't really have any time to inspect it.
Yeah, that is a good point. Well,
and you were probably still pretty tired from that sleeping agent.
Oh, yeah, but I'm tired all the time anyway.
By the way, you mentioned hyper-realistic Mario. He's not in the room right now.
Ooh. About that.
I don't see anything.
About that.
I guess it was just a ghost. Well, see you next week.
Well, bye, ride operator Bane.
I love the 572 days reveal, which, by the way, I believe it is 572 days,
You're
actually.
You're correct.
oh, I was thinking of Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
Well, that's not this.
I wish we were talking about Kingdom Hearts right now.
You mean we have to defeat the Skidamarink to deal with this dimension door?
Oh, my God.
But
maybe we are talking about Kingdom Hearts.
This whole time, it's actually just Kingdom Hearts. Sorry, continue.
Yeah, no, it's actually, that's the post-credits scene, is that, like, we just see Sora, Donald, and Goofy coming into the house.
Oh my God.
Kevin's fine. Yeah.
The only thing that could stop the Skidamarink is Zeta Flare, the strongest spell in Final Fantasy canon.
Yeah.
Making Donald Duck one of the strongest mages in all of Final Fantasy.